Hi, I'm Vernon Trolliger for Optometry Times, and this is 10 questions for Jennifer Coyle, OD, MS, FAAO, Dean at the Pacific University College of Optometry.
Where did you grow up?
I grew up, actually I was born in Minnesota, and when I was in middle school, we moved to Alaska. My mom was a homemaker. My father worked as a pipe fitter, and the pipeline drew him to Alaska. So I kind of feel as if I grew up in both places. And in Alaska, we actually lived in a log cabin. It was a true Alaska experience. No running water. We had electricity, but no HVAC. And we were in that log cabin for about 5 years.
Where in Minnesota did you live?
I was born in South St. Paul, and we just lived around the St. Paul area.
Why contact lenses?
When I came to optometry school, I assumed, thinking I was going to go back to Kodiak, Alaska, where I was from, and I worked in a practice there all through high school. And I was going to go back and work in that private practice and perhaps specialize in pediatrics. In my second year of optometry school, the second week of the basic contact lens course, I was just inspired. I just became fascinated with the idea that you put this little piece of plastic in the eye and you can see. And I had personally benefited in my life, I think, had been transformed by contact lenses as a teenager. And my mentor, Christina Schneider, was just very inspirational. And I really wanted to learn as much as I could and completely changed my career path. I stayed in academia. I completed a contact lens residency. Was really involved in research because there were all these questions I wanted to answer, and all because I was just fascinated with this concept that we can see out of something so small, and it's so intricate, and it's life-changing for people.
Well, you mentioned working in an optometrist's office when you were in high school. How did that come about?
So when I was 15, the summer between my freshman and sophomore year of high school, I got a job at the Dairy Queen. And I went to the local optometrist and said, I really would love contact lenses, but I have to pay for them myself with my salary from the Dairy Queen. Would you put me on a payment plan? This was back in the 80s. And he said, I will hire you and you can work for those contact lenses. And he made me pay for them. And so I would work for him from 8 to 5 in the summertime. And then I worked at the Dairy Queen in the evening from 5 to 11. And I paid off those contact lenses. And I ended up working for him all through high school and then the first 2 summers after college. He was a mentor and he inspired me also to seek optometry as a career path to begin with. And I think he's now forgiven me that I haven't gone back and to take over his practice so he can retire 30 years later.
You spent, 30 years at Pacific University College of Optometry, both as a student and now as the dean. So what keeps you at Pacific University?
It's home. I started here in 1989, 30 years ago, as a first-year optometry student. And it's a culture where it brings the best out of people. We live in a beautiful place. I'm not going to deny that, but it's the people that I learned from, the people I worked alongside as a faculty member for all those years. And it's the people I get to advocate for as a dean. And really that's my role. My role is to advocate for multiple constituents, students, faculty, the profession of optometry, my college, and our alumni. And the people get me jazzed about doing what I do because we all have sort of this common purpose, and there's a very strong philosophy about eye and vision care and how important the eyes and vision are to allow a person to be able to function and be successful and enjoy their life. And everyone really respects that as a common core, and that it's my truth. That it's really important to me. And it's been a place where I've had just opportunity after opportunity, including my kids. My kids are both graduating on May 18th from Pacific. So I'm also our mascot's a boxer. I'm also a boxer mom. So I'm a student, a faculty member, an administrator, and a parent at Pacific.
Okay, so not only are you Dean of Pacific University College of Optometry, but you also have a private practice over in Beaverton, Oregon. Why stay in private practice?
Well, I actually am no longer in the practice. I was an associate in that practice.
Okay.
I practiced for 12 years in a multi-doctor group practice. And they allowed me to be able to practice what I taught and to really hone my skills working with patients one-on-one for those 12 years. And they allowed me to specialize and do things with contact lenses that no one else in the community was doing. It was a great opportunity for me as a practitioner to grow. But when I became an administrator, it's been 15 years now, I realized after I tried to do it all that you can't always do it all, and I had to pick. And the hardest day of my life was the last day, one of the hardest days, last day of practice and saying goodbye to my patients and the staff there. But I had to decide, was my path, you know, what am I going to focus on, academia, or am I going to focus on the patients that I was seeing? And it just, at the end of the day, I knew that academia was, you know, in my DNA after all of those years.
What's something your colleagues don't know about you?
I had a 9-month-old daughter when I started optometry school. So this whole thing about work-life balance and adulting, I started that at, you know, right away in optometry school with a 9-month-old. And then when I graduated, I was 9 months pregnant. So I had my second child right after graduation from optometry school. So I've always been one of those who had to figure out that whole balance thing from the beginning. And my son, who I was very pregnant with, who's already, we say, graduated, he's the one who's graduating from optometry school this May.
So what keeps you engaged in teaching then?
The students and the opportunity in the profession, and I feel like every day we do something new and we encounter a new scenario, and I just feel like I'm in an extremely dynamic environment, and there are people that are just so dedicated to education, but they're so dedicated to optometry, and they're very dedicated to science, and it's just, things are always happening, and I never know what's coming, and there's always a new challenge, and I get to meet new people every single day and make connections. Now I'm at the point in my career where I'm not the one who's trying to figure it out. I'm the one who's trying to help others figure out where they want to go and what they want to do. And mentorship and leadership has become really important to me. I can't say it's replaced my Levo contact lenses, but it's a close second.
Well, with that in mind, what three things do you advise students entering optometry school?
They need to be open-minded. I'm the perfect example. You need to realize that we are a profession, and everything we do reflects the profession. And it's really important to, like I tell our students, build your professional street cred. So always be thinking about goals, and always be thinking about making choices that will set you up for success. At graduation, I always tell our students, after I put their hood on them and shake their hand, I usually whisper in their ear, now go find your bliss. And my advice for students is to set them up for success as early as possible. Find mentors. Go ahead and explore something that scares you, or a specialty area that you don't know a lot about, just to find out if that's what you want to do. And try to just kind of build up experiences so that when you get into the profession, after you graduate, you have choice. And you can go practice in the location of your dreams, or enter into the mode of practice that, you know, really makes you excited about getting up every day and taking care of patients. So my advice is to keep your options open and always be thinking about ways that you can learn and build up your professional street cred.
You travel and lecture frequently. What's your favorite city?
Oh, boy. I love Paris. The fire in Notre Dame is just heartbreaking. Paris is just such an amazing city because of the history and the culture and the food. And And I like the challenge of people speaking French to me, and I'm trying to get by on my high school and freshman level college French. That would be my all-time favorite city in the world.
Okay. Speaking about Paris and food, what's your guilty pleasure food?
You know what? If I could eat a sandwich every day, I would. You know, I think for the last, 20 years, bread and fat have gotten a bad rap. And, my guilty food is a really good sandwich. But
okay. What sandwich?
Something with lots of vegetables, turkey, and avocados. Anything with an avocado, I'm down for.
Okay. Do you have any regrets?
I'm sure we all do, but when you're an individual who takes risks and is willing to try new things and always put yourself out there, and I'm oftentimes the first one to volunteer for things, you can't live your life looking at regrets, because I just don't have time for that, to be honest. If I look back in my younger years as a practitioner, I wish I'd learned what Dr. Linda Kasser taught me, the art of marinade. You don't always have to make decisions on the spot. You don't always have to have everything figured out right away. And I wish I'd learned earlier the art of the great marinade, where you gather information and you just let it sit for a little bit. And sometimes all you need is a really good night's sleep and 24 hours to wake up and look at whatever it is, the decision you have to make, with a fresh perspective. And usually your gut tells you. And I wish I'd followed my gut a little bit more in the past, and that I'd let things marinate and didn't think I always had to figure it out right away. And maybe that's just taken time to accept that that's actually a really good thing to do.
How should optometry move forward? Speaking of marinating.
We need to embrace what makes us so great and strong as a profession, and that is we really care about patients and we are really great communicators. We need to not only hone in on our skills as a practitioner and the optometric skills that we need to be good doctors, but we also need to think about communication and think about working with other health professions in a true collaborative way, and the big part of that is communication. We need to embrace intercultural communication as the diversity of our nation changes, or North America changes, and we need to get into, thinking about how our patients are going to respond to us and relax around us, so that we can relate with anyone that comes into our door in some respect, to that ultimately so that they feel comfortable seeking out their eye care from us. So I think it's a time in our profession where we're thinking beyond just whether or not we're good, skilled diagnosticians. We also need to really be focused on communication, and also with each other, and as I said, with other health professions. At the same time, where we're going, we're getting better at being diagnosticians, because we have so much technology at our fingertips. And my hope for my fellow practitioners is that we can slowly discard some of the fear and embrace it in a way to make us better. And also not to ignore it, not to over-marinate, right? Don't think it's just going to go away if we just ignore it for a while. We have to figure out a way that incorporates it into our practice, so that we're the best doctor we can be. But at the same time, we need to also remember that there are areas of expertise that we all possess that technology is not going to replace. And that is really that communication with the patient and understanding how they use their eyes, using our in-depth knowledge of optics and binocular vision and taking care of children, and contact lenses are going to be really hard to do strictly by a computer, especially in specialty areas. So we have a ton going for us. Technology can make us even better. And my hope is that we can stay positive and open-minded, basically.
Now for the last question, we inflict this one on everybody.
Uh-oh.
What's the craziest thing you've ever done?
Okay, the scariest thing I've ever done. I agreed to MC the banquet for the Academy New Fellows, which 800 people you stand in front of and you're celebrating and you're trying to be funny and you're trying not to trip over your own tongue and having 800 people stare up at you while they're clanking on their plates. And so I think that was crazy. And not only that, I did it twice.
They asked you back.
Mid-career. And the first year I emceed the banquet for the new Academy Fellows as Jenny Smythe. And the second year as Jenny Coyle. Yeah. So what better way to introduce 800 people to your new name than to have dinner with them and stand up in front of them and keep a banquet going. I get very nervous every time I speak to anyone in any group. It could be a class of kindergartners, 800 legends in my profession, because I take it so seriously. And to me, that was pretty crazy because that was pushing my limits of a little bit of a fear of speaking in front of strangers. Mm-hmm. Believe it or not.
Okay. Well, that's all the questions I got for you, Jenny. Thanks for getting this all together so we can chat today. This is great.
All right. Nice to meet you face to face.
Yeah.